Pathfinder that they were ready to go.
We'll be there in 15 minutes.
Slipping on his headset, he reached out to the Great Presence and took the anvil back into hyperspace. Rapoq was what the Pathfinders called a box system, surrounded by variable electromagnetic fluxes, and with the entire inner system littered with so many asteroids and other shifting masses that entry from hyperspace was limited to only a handful of vectors. Adding in the necessity for the two ships of Crowfix's small task force to stay together, that dropped the entry points to really only one. Kilori moved the anvil into position along that vector, feeling the Great Presence guide him through the twists and past the obstacles, sensing the other Pathfinder matching the hammer's path at his side. They reached the indicated endpoint. Once again, the Great Presence faded from Kilori's consciousness as Kilori pulled the ship out of hyperspace. He pulled off his headset, taking a deep breath as he looked out the viewport. There was the hammer, right where it was supposed to be on the anvil's starboard flank. In the distance ahead, he could see Rapoq's sun, though the planet itself was too far away for the unaided eye to see. Directly ahead of them, floating in place like a silent messenger of death, its weapons, trained on the Kilji cruisers, was a Nicardune blockade frigate. Kilori's winglets flattened with shock. By all accounts, the remnants of General Yiv's battle forces had been obliterated. Some of the troops and warships taken out by Yiv's victims, others destroyed by the Chiss Ascendancy itself. How in the depths had this warship survived?
Intruders into the Rapoq system. You face the Nicardune warship, Aelos.
The Ta'arja words came over the anvil speakers.
Identify yourself.
I am General Crowfip of the Kilji Illuman,
Crowfip said. If he was surprised or worried by the unexpected presence of a Nicardune warship, it didn't show in his voice.
Move aside or be destroyed.
Identify your purpose here,
the voice said, ignoring the threat.
I say again, move aside,
Crowfip repeated.
Identify your purpose here,
I said.
General,
Kilori spoke up, turning and lifting a hand for attention.
With your permission?
You will not interrupt one of the Enlightened,
Crowfif snarled, shifting his glare from the frigate to Kilori.
My apologies,
Kilori said.
But with your permission, I believe I can end this confrontation without violence. I know these people.
Crowfif's skin rippled repulsively, and it was all Kilori could do to keep his winglets still. The general's pride, battling with his burning desire for all people to live until they could be forced into Kilji enlightenment.
You have 1 minute,
he said.
Thank you.
Kilori turned back to the viewport.
Aelos, I am Kilori of Uwandualon,
he said into the nav station's mic.
Former associate of General Yiv the Benevolent, who was himself an associate of the one named Jixtus, agent and coordinator of the Grisks. General Crowfip and the Kiljis are also associates of Jixtus, which makes us all allies. There is therefore no reason for conflict.
We know of no one called Jixtus,
the Nicardune said.
Perhaps not,
Kilori said.
He and his people are content to keep to the shadows, but I can affirm that he was the one who guided General Yiv's conquests here at Rapoq, as well as elsewhere across the region.
There was a short pause.
Was this Jixtus also the one who brought General Yiv to his doom?
No, of course not,
Kilori said.
General Yiv was overwhelmed by massive forces beyond even his ability to withstand.
Which wasn't at all what had happened, of course, but it would sit better with a group of Nicardune survivors than the true story of how Yiv was defeated.
But with the arrival of the Kilgis, the Nicardune now have the chance to rise again.
How would this be?
Under the guidance of Jigstus, they will...
Enough!
Crowfip growled.
The Nicardune are defeated, Pathfinder, and will never again arise. Speak lies and soothings when it is only your time that you waste. We are the Kilgis, and we will take what we want. Move from our path, Nicardune, or die!
Then you do not, in fact, serve with Jesus, as the Pathfinder said?
The Nicardune asked, his voice still calm.
The Pathfinder told you what you wanted to hear,
Crowfip said contemptuously.
Here is the enlightened truth. Yiv did not serve with Jigstus, but under Jigstus, as a slave serves under a master. Nor are the Kilgis associates of Jigstus, but his masters. We use him as a guide and advisor to our voyages. Nothing more.
On what subjects does he advise you?
He identifies which of the ignorant peoples of this region require enlightenment.
Crowfip said, his voice going icy.
Your Nicardune remnant will be one of those. Have no fear, but the task will be for later. For now, we merely require that the refugees who fled from their world and now hide here among the Pakosh be handed over to us.
Kilori's winglets twitched. Refugees? This was the first time Crowfip had mentioned refugees.
What do you want with the refugees?
The Nicardune asked. His voice had changed subtly, Kilori noticed, as if he'd boosted the clarity, focus, or overall power of his transmission.
Are you deaf as well as unenlightened?
Crowfip demanded.
Like all others, they walk in darkness. We are here to take them to a place where they can be enlightened.
Cannot enlighten them here?
The Nicardune asked.
They are useful servants to us. We do not wish to lose them.
The wishes of the unenlightened are of no importance,
Crowfip said.
Do you move aside, or do you die?
You who claim to offer enlightenment seem all too willing to extinguish the lives of those who need your guidance,
the Nicardune said pointedly.
But no matter. I accede to your demands. The Nicardune warship Aelos will lead the way. Prepare to follow as I guide you through our orbital defenses.
I need no guide,
Crowfip said.
I need you merely to stand aside.
The defenses are subtle and mighty,
the Nicardune insisted.
Without a guide, you will quickly be overcome.
Crowfip growled deeply in the back of his throat.
Move aside,
he ordered.
I will not tell you again.
I have my orders,
the Nicardune said.
I must stand firm until assistance arrives.
There! then you will die where you stand.
With a flick of his finger, he cut off the anvil's transmission.
Vassal Four, signal connotudinous that upon my signal, Hammer is to move past the Aelos along its port side and continue on to the planet,
he ordered.
Vassal One, prepare to likewise move us past the Aelos along its starboard side. If Tanikadun moves into our path, Vassal Three, you are to destroy him.
I obey,
Vassal One acknowledged.
I obey,
Vassal Three added. Kilori's winglets twitched. Crowfip was in an arrogant mood, with his maneuver clearly calculated to show both dominance and contempt for the Aelos. Certainly there was reason for both. The blockade frigate was smaller and less well-armed than either of the two Kilji cruisers. No match for either, let alone both. But at the same time, passing on its flanks was practically an invitation from the Nicardoon to open fire on both ships, with the Kilgis forced to restrict their own counterfire lest they overshoot and hit each other. If the Nicardoon was willing to sacrifice himself and his ship, he could do significant damage to the Kilji force.
General, if I may suggest...
You may not!
Crowfip cut him off.
Never forget, Pathfinder, that you and your kind are also in need of enlightenment. The more you demonstrate the darkness of your current path, the more tempted I become to move you to the top of the Illumin's list. Is that how you desire this day to end?
No, General,
Kilori said, fighting to keep his winglets from spasming. He still had no idea what Kilji enlightenment consisted of, but anything decided on by generals and administered beneath the weapons of warships was unlikely to be pleasant.
I didn't think so,
Crowfip said.
Vassal One, as soon as the Nicardoon moves to attack, execute my order.
I obey.
Why isn't he moving?
Crowfip demanded. Kilori's winglets settled into a frown. Crowfip was right. The Nicardoon was just sitting there. What was he waiting for?
General, a new ship has appeared to starboard,
Vassal Two put in, suddenly from the sensor station.
Unknown configuration! The ship is hailing us,
Vassal Four added. He touched a switch.
Unidentified ships. This is Senior Captain Thrawn of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk.
An all-too-familiar voice said from the Anvil's bridge speaker.
You stand near our prey. Move clear of the Nicardoon blockade frigate Aelos, or suffer the humiliation of becoming collateral damage.
Memories. 4.
I'd like to say you're in trouble,
Thras commented.
But in all honesty, I can't.
Thrawn shrugged as he moved one of his firewolves across the tactica playing board laid out on the game cafe table between them.
I appreciate the vote of confidence in my game, he said. I'd like to say in turn that you're playing far better than you did at our last session. Unlike you, however, I can honestly do so.
And I appreciate that as well,
Thras said, looking pointedly at the two holding zones along the sides of the board.
Though all the compliments in the universe can't hide the fact I'm still down a firewolf and a whisper bird.
But you're up 3 stingflies,
Thrawn reminded him.
Not a bad showing for someone who only learned the game 8 weeks ago.
And I'll never know how I ever let you talk me into this, Thras said, mock crossly. A game that plays to all of your strengths and against all of mine? Foolish syndic that I am.
Really? Thrawn said, mock chiding. I thought tactics and strategy were basic tools of the trade in the Syndicure.
No, they're important enough, Thras agreed.
He moved his ground lion, tapped one of Thrawn's stingflies, and took it off the board.
But not as important as verbal skills and basic theatrics.
Yes, I've seen the Syndicure in action, Thrawn said dryly. Perhaps in full voice would be a more accurate description.
He moved his night dragon, tapped the ground lion, and handed it to Thras.
You'll want to put this beside the Whisper Bird, he added, pointing to Thras's holding zone. They'll be better able to support each other if you decide on a sortie.
Right. Thanks.
Thras set the ground lion where Thrawn had suggested. He was getting better at the main game, but still had a bad tendency to lose track of the sortie option.
I always forget about that.
It's easy to do, Thrawn agreed. But you need to keep it in the back of your mind as a fallback option, if and when your main strategy fails.
I know the theory, Thras said ruefully. I just usually don't have it in my head where I can get at it.
He cocked an eyebrow at Thrawn.
By the way, joking aside, I really do enjoy the game, and I appreciate you teaching it to me.
Oh, I know, Thrawn assured him.
Good,
Thras said.
I'm never quite sure if you're picking up the subtexts and nuances beneath what I'm actually saying.
Sadly, I do sometimes have problems in that area, Thrawn admitted.
He picked up a cheese triangle from their snack platter and popped it into his mouth, then moved his night dragon to an attack position against Thras's remaining whisper bird.
I suppose that's why you're in the Syndicure, and I'm in the Expansionary Defense Fleet. We don't have much need of subtext and theatrics in my profession.
Oh, I don't know,
Thras said, pondering how he could get his whisper bird out of harm's way. Invoking the one-time transference rule would do nicely, but if he did that, he would lose the use of one of his fire wolves if and when he tried for a sortie down the line.
Theatrics have their uses in any profession. In moderation, of course.
Shiraki?
An anxious voice came from the left, rising above the background murmur of conversation.
Jiraki!
Thras turned to look. At one of the tables across the cafe, a man was slumped over in his chair, his hands clutching at his throat and chest. His two companions had shoved back their own chairs and scrambled to their feet. The man hovering uncertainly over his companion as he punched at the emergency key on his comm. The woman clutching the sick man's shoulder.
He's having an attack!
She gasped, her voice rising in volume and pitch, her face contorting with anguish and fear.
He's having an attack! Someone help! Someone! Please!
Hang on!
The cashier at the charge register called back. She was already on her way toward them, the cafe's emergency kit in hand, dodging through the array of tables and past the other patrons staring at the stricken man.
I wonder where the other man is,
Thrawn murmured. Thras shot him a look.
What?
There were four people at that table,
Thrawn said, his forehead creased in thought.
One of the men is missing.
Really?
Thras said, frowning as he looked around the room. There were a few people who were away from their tables, but all of them looked like they'd been on their way for food or bathroom breaks before the sudden drama froze them to their sections of floor.
What did he look...
He broke off. There, crouching behind the counter, with the top of his head just barely visible, someone was tapping into the charge register. It's a robbery, Thras said quietly. Remember what I just said about theatrics being useful in any profession?
A diversion, Thrawn said, nodding grimly. And the patrollers aren't likely to get here in time. I suppose it's up to us to stop it.
He started to get up.
No, no,
Thras said, waving him back down.
I've got this. Watch and learn.
He stood up and headed quietly toward the charge register, angling across the open space as he walked to put himself between the thief and the main exit. He had no idea how long it would take to crack the safe locks on the cafe's register and download the payments, but the plan was probably timed to get the group safely out before the emergency medical personnel arrived. Assuming, of course, that the accomplice who'd looked like he was summoning help had actually done so. If he'd just gone through the motions for show, and to prevent any of the onlookers from doing likewise, the thief would have a lot more time to work with. The cashier had reached the table now, and she and the other woman were pawing through the contents of the emergency kit. The accomplice, Thras noted, was deftly refusing all the cashier's suggestions of inhalants and broad-spectrum med-relief injectors, probably spinning a story of some rare disease and warning against counterproductive medicines. Thras reached his chosen starting position and took a deep breath. Then, abandoning his inconspicuous walk, he broke into an all-out run toward the counter.
Pontrus!
He shouted.
Come on, buddy! Jaraki's in trouble!
Like magic, every eye in the cafe turned toward him.
Come on, buddy, he repeated. You've got the spare ejector, right?
Behind the counter, the thief raised his head a few centimeters, his eyes wide with confusion and growing alarm as he saw Thras rushing toward him. He opened his mouth as if about to protest, maybe to claim he wasn't Pontrus and didn't have any ejector. But it was too late. Everyone was looking at him now, crouched behind the counter where he wasn't supposed to be. From Thras's new vantage point, as he ran toward the man, he could see the data siphon plugged into the register. There was a sudden scrambling sound from Thras's left, and as if that was a signal, the thief leapt to his feet and charged toward Thras, clearly intent on getting past or through him and escaping out the door. Thras braked to a stop, shifting to a poised stance that would let him move in any direction if the thief tried to dodge around him. The thief snarled something and snatched out a knife. Thras took a reflexive step backward, then grabbed a nearby chair and held it in front of him like a shield. Too late, he realized he should have signaled for the patrollers as soon as he and Thrawn realized a robbery was in progress. Too late now. From behind him came a pair of dull thumps, followed by a much louder one. Thras kept his eyes focused on the man still running toward him. And then, abruptly, the man faltered and came to a stumbling halt. His eyes flickered over Thras's shoulder. Then came back to Thras, a frustrated weariness settling onto his face. With a sigh, he tossed the knife onto a nearby table, where another group of wide-eyed gamers was sitting.
Are you all right? Thrawn's voice came.
Thras risked a look over his shoulder. Thrawn was standing near the exit, his hands raised in combat stance. The man who'd been faking the illness stretched out unconscious on the floor at his feet. The woman and the other man were standing like stunned statues a couple of meters farther back. Thrawn's quick and efficient neutralization of their friend having apparently convinced them to abandon their own bids for freedom.
I'm fine, Thras said.
Turning back and motioning the fourth member of the gang to move away from his discarded knife. Even with a weapon in hand, he'd apparently decided not to risk it. But then, like his friends, he'd had a full view of the brief fight. Thras was starting to regret having missed the show. He shifted his gaze to the other patrons, most of them just starting to recover from their bewilderment.
Everyone relax. It's all over, he called. Oh, and if one of you fine people would like to call the patrollers...
The patrollers arrived. The thieves' data siphon was marked and inventoried, and the contents returned to the cafe's charge register. And Thras and Thrawn were finally able to return to their table, where a fresh platter of snacks had already been delivered by the cafe's grateful manager.
Now,
Thras said briskly, as he sampled one of the fruit sticks.
Where were we?
I believe you're expounding on the use of dramatics in diversionary tactics, Thrawn said. I was about to ask if you could offer me a good example.
Consider it offered, Thras said. You'll note the technique can also be used to draw attention away from one place and point it to another.
Yes, Thrawn said, looking thoughtfully at the board. Very well done, too, I might add. Unfortunately, the tactic appears to require skills that I don't possess.
Don't worry. You have plenty of other skills to fall back on, Thras assured him. Did the fleet train you to introduce people to the floor like that, or did you pick up that trick on your own?
The fleet gave me the basics, Thrawn said. But yes, I moved on from there. Aside from the valuable exercise involved, simulated combat also helps train the eye to notice small errors, and the mind to learn how to take advantage of them.
Which occasionally results in free food, Thras said dryly, waving at the platter. So, where were we really?
I believe my night dragon was threatening your whisper bird.
Right.
Thras shifted his attention back to the game.
So, should I let you take it?
If you think you're ready to try a sortie, Thrawn said. If so, you'll need to bring in either the Whisper Bird or one of your firewolves to have any reasonable chance of success.
Right, Thras said, studying the board. I think letting you take the Whisper Bird puts me in a better strategic position.
It does indeed, Thrawn said approvingly. Excellent. At this rate, I'll soon have to rescind the spotting advantage I've been giving you.
Thras frowned at him.
What spotting advantage?
Haven't you noticed? Thrawn said innocently. I've been playing you left-handed.
Ah,
Thras said dryly. Right. Playing a board game left-handed. Huge tactical sacrifice.
Now you're just making fun of me.
Not at all, Thrawn said. Merely employing controlled confusion as a diversion.
I knew that, Thras assured him. Okay, let's give it a shot. Will you help walk me through this?
Certainly.
Thrawn moved his night dragon, tapped the Whisper Bird, and handed it to Thras.
You'll probably want to put him first in line. So set him there, in front of that ground lion.
Chapter 7. The last hour was the hardest. The last half hour was almost literally painful to watch. Simacro spent that time standing beside Thalias, watching as she swayed visibly despite her grip on the back of Chiri's chair, waiting for her to either call an end to the session or else collapse onto the deck from sheer exhaustion. If it came to the latter, hopefully he would be quick enough to catch her. More worrisome, though far less visible, was the physical and mental state of the Skywalker herself. Sitting in her chair, gazing at nothing as she manipulated the controls, she looked mostly the way she always did. But Simacro could see the fresh creases around her eyes, the unnatural paleness of her skin, the slightly jerky movements of her fingers. she was as fatigued as Thalias, probably more so, with her smaller child's body less able to handle the accumulating stress. The longer she kept this up, the more likely she would miss something in the chaos they were driving through and either damage the ship or send it skating completely off course. Thrawn surely knew that as well as Simakro did, and yet he continued to sit quietly in his command chair, his eyes moving systematically among the status displays, keeping an occasional eye on Thalias, but making no attempt to intervene. Simakro had done a search earlier on his Questis, and Ciri was already long past the record for a Skywalker navigational session. Was Thrawn so obsessed with Rapak and getting the Magus off the Springhawk that he was willing to risk everything to do so? Possibly. Or possibly it was simply that Thrawn knew Ciri better than Simakro did. The senior captain and Skywalker had spent several weeks together out at the edge of lesser space, after all. Perhaps during that time, Thrawn had gained insight into Ciri's stamina and ability to spend extended periods in third sight. But everyone had their limits. And with the Springhawk one easy jump away from Rapak, Ciri and Thalias finally reached theirs. The bridge viewport was glowing with the swirl of hyperspace when Simakro returned from escorting Thalias and Ciri back to the Skywalker suite.
How are they?
Thrawn asked as Simakro came up beside the command chair.
About as close to being literally asleep on their feet as I've ever seen, Simakro said. He lowered his voice. In my opinion, Senior Captain, and off the record, that was an unnecessarily dangerous thing to put the Springhawk through. I agree, Miss Captain,
Thrawn said evenly.
Except for the unnecessarily part.
Simakro frowned.
I don't understand. I don't entirely understand myself,
Thrawn conceded.
I simply note that the sudden intensity of Ciri's nightmares may point to something significant. You think that the Magus was pushing her extra hard for reasons of her own? Or else that the Magus' pressure on Ciri has reached a breaking point, Thrawn said. Either way, it suggests that we should take whatever actions and risks are necessary to get her to Rapak as quickly as we can.
Simakro looked at the hyperspace swirl.
I hope you're right, sir. As do I,
Thrawn said, looking over at the nav display.
Lieutenant Commander Asmodee, stand by. Bring us to space normal a bit farther out from the inner system than you did our last trip here.
Yes, Senior Captain,
Asmodee said from the helm.
Breakout position marked.
Thank you,
Thrawn said.
Prepare for breakout. 3, 2, 1.
The star flares burst out of the swirl and contracted into stars, and the Springhawk was back in space normal.
Full scan,
Thrawn ordered.
You think Wingali 4 Mar-Oksa will still be on the station in their captured Nicar Dune blockade frigate?
Simakro asked.
That's one of the things I hoped to see,
Thrawn said.
If he's not, that may tell us something about the situation here.
Simakro nodded silently. The last time the Springhawk had paid a visit, Wingali had mentioned other ships having tried to enter the Rapak system. If one of them had decided not to take no for an answer...
Combat range clear,
Dalvu called from the sensor station.
Mid-range? 3 warships, Senior Captain.
Simakro looked at the sensor display as Dalvu keyed in full magnification. There were 3 ships out there, all right, though the distance made positive identification impossible. 2 of them, battlecruiser size, were facing away from the Springhawk, while the 3rd ship, smaller and somewhat more distant, Wingali's blockade frigate, was facing off against them. All three were holding position, and something about their bearing and positioning gave Symmachro the impression that he was seeing the last stages of a confrontation.
Acknowledged, Thrawn said. Battle stations.
The warning lights came on, and the quiet calm of the bridge became an equally quiet flurry of activity, as weapons and defense systems were activated and weapons crews summoned to their posts.
Can you identify the two larger ships? Symmachro called. No need, Thrawn said. They're sister ships to the Kilgee warship Whetstone.
Symmachro peered at the display.
Are you sure, sir? Quite sure, Thrawn said. Even from here, I can see the similarities between them and the ship we saw at Zyzek.
Senior Captain, we're getting a transmission, Lieutenant Commander Brisch called from the comm station.
What do you want with the refugees?
A voice came from the bridge speaker. Symmachro felt his stomach tighten. It was Wingali's voice, all right, and the comm display marked the signal as coming from the smallest ship of the distant trio.
Are your death as well, Sovereign Lightened?
A new voice cut in, rich with anger and arrogance, with the slight echo that indicated the signal was being received by Wingali and then transmitted back out to the Springhawk.
Like all others, they walk in darkness. We are here to take them to a place where they can be enlightened.
Symmachro nodded to himself. Enlightened. General Arias Nakir had talked about enlightenment, too. Thrawn was right. These were more of Nakir's Kilgees.
Can you not enlighten them, Shia?
Wingali asked.
They are useful servants to us. We don't wish to lose them.
Symmachro looked at Thrawn, saw his commander's eyes narrow. Unless things had changed drastically on Rapak, the refugees from Sunrise weren't being worked by the Pakosh, so why would Wingali say such a thing? Because he was mainly talking to the Kilgee warships, of course. They were here to gather up the Sunrise refugees for some reason, and Wingali was trying to stall them. An effort that was, unfortunately, doomed to failure. The blockade frigate was vastly overmatched by the two battlecruisers. If and when the Kilgees decided the conversation was over, they would move on, and Wingali could either let them go or die in a futile attempt to stop them. Unless Wingali knew something the Kilgees didn't. Symmachro looked at the sensor display. The Kilgee warships were still facing the blockade frigate, without making any attempt to come around to face the far larger Chiss-heavy cruiser that had now appeared in the Rapak system behind them. Which strongly suggested that, with their attention focused on Wingali and their drive emissions interfering with their aft sensors, they'd completely missed the Springhawk's arrival. He felt his lips crease in a tight smile. That was the kind of mistake Thrawn was very good at taking advantage of.
The wishes of the unenlightened are of no importance,
the Kilgee said.
Do you move aside, or do you die?
You who claim to offer enlightenment seem all too willing to extinguish the lives of those who need your guidance,
Wingali replied.
But no matter. I accede to your demands. The Nicardun warship, Aelos, will lead the way. Prepare to follow as I guide you through our orbital defenses.
Symmachro looked at Thrawn. The senior captain had his questus out and was punching in a series of orders and targeting vectors. He finished and keyed them to their respective stations.
They need no guide,
the Kilgee said.
They need you merely to stand aside.
The defenses are subtle and might Mighty,
Wingali said, trying one more time.
Without a guide, you will quickly be overcome.
There was a brief guttural sound. The Kilji ordered.
I will not get you again.
I have my orders. I must stand firm until assistance arrives.
Then you will die where you stand.
Senior Captain, we can't interfere, Simakra warned quietly.
I think we can, Thrawn said. Asmodee, can you make the necessary in-system jump?
Yes, sir,
the pilot confirmed, leaning over his displays as he keyed in the location Thrawn had sent him.
I can't guarantee closer than 100 meters, though.
Simakra felt his stomach tighten. In-system jumps were notoriously tricky, and Thrawn's plans, unfortunately, usually required laser point accuracy. If 100 meters was too far off the mark, there could be trouble. But for once, apparently, Thrawn's strategy had a bit more margin for error.
That will be acceptable, Thrawn said.
Afpryor, I trust you can be more accurate?
Yes, sir,
Senior Commander Chaff Priumi said confidently from the weapon station.
Spheres armed and locked on targets.
Asmodee?
Ready, Senior Captain.
Afpryor?
Fire on my signal, Thrawn said. 3, 2, 1.
The Springhawk gave a small twitch as the double salvo of plasma spheres blasted from their launchers and disappeared ahead into the darkness.
Asmodee, stand ready, Thrawn continued. In-system jump. Then your port side 90 degrees. 3, 2, 1.
The starscape shifted subtly, sparking an equally small flicker of disorientation in Simakro's brain. It was followed immediately by a much more obvious shift as Asmodee rotated the ship 90 degrees to port side, bringing the Springhawk, no doubt exactly as Thrawn had intended, to face the starboard flanks of the two Kilji cruisers. They were Kilji's, all right, Simakra noted as he looked them over. From the Springhawk's new vantage point, even he could see the design similarities Thrawn had already noted. One of the warships was also noticeably shorter than the other, with smaller weapon shoulders and fewer electrostatic barrier nodes. Possibly the Kilji equivalent of Chiss Heavy and Light Cruisers.
Unidentified ships. This is Senior Captain Thrawn of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk, Thrawn called into Arja. You stand near our prey. Move clear of the Nicardoon blockade frigate Aelos, or suffer the humiliation of becoming collateral damage.
Simakra felt his eyes narrow. If the Kilji ships did anything other than simply turn in place...
Sir?
He asked urgently.
General Arius Nakir showed us that same maneuver at Zyzak, Thrawn reminded him. It's a very deliberate, very confident move, and one I expect he taught his chief commanders.
He smiled faintly.
Plus, I ordered him to move away from the Aelos. He doesn't strike me as the sort to readily obey an adversary's commands.
Sure enough, even before Thrawn finished speaking, the two Kilgis began to move, rotating sideways toward the Springhawk, exactly as the senior captain had anticipated.
Who are you to speak of, Freddy?
The Kilgis' voice rang out over the bridge speaker.
And who are you to give orders to warships of the Illumin?
I already gave you my name, Thrawn said. Do you need me to repeat it?
There was a vicious-sounding snarl from the speaker.
Your name will die with you unenlightened fool!
The Kilgee bit out. An instant later, a volley of laser fire lanced out from both cruisers' shoulders and bow emplacements.
Apparently, he means for us to die right now,
Simacro commented.
Apparently so,
Thrawn agreed, keying the mute switch.
F'Praia, barrier's holding,
the weapons officer confirmed.
89% dissipated. I don't think they've found the frequency for our hull yet.
Let's make certain they don't.
Thrawn keyed the comm back on.
You make an extravagant promise,
he said, as the Kilgee ship sent out their second salvo.
Does he who makes that promise fear to identify himself to the one he intends to kill?
I fear nothing,
the Kilgee said.
I am General Crawford of the Kilgee.
And as the third laser fire barrage blazed across the vacuum, the plasma spheres Thrawn had launched from the Springhawk's original position completed their journey and slammed into the Kilgee cruiser's starboard flanks.
Return fire,
Thrawn ordered, as the ion burst scattered across the cruiser's hulls, instantly silencing the weapons they impacted.
Lasers on the port side, breachers on starboard, and one sphere on the Alos.
Simacro shifted his attention to the blockade frigate. Wingali was pulling back from the Kilgee warships, apparently trying to get clear of the line of fire. He frowned. Why would Thrawn order a plasma sphere that would thwart that effort?
He's moving into position for a crossfire attack,
Thrawn said, answering Simacro's unspoken question, as a single plasma sphere shot out amid the flurry of breacher missiles and laser fire.
The Kilgees seem to think he's an ally, or at least a neutral. I'd like to preserve that misunderstanding for the moment, if I can.
Yes, sir, Simacro said.
That made sense, he supposed, though what use Thrawn might have for such a misconception he couldn't guess.
Never throw away a possible weapon when it's unnecessary to do so.
Thrawn nodded toward the viewport.
Especially when the enemy is making a move like that.
Simacro followed his gaze. The larger Kilgee cruiser had moved a short distance toward the Springhawk, driving straight into the storm of laser fire. But as it edged forward, it was also turning its paralyzed starboard flank into the Springhawk's attack. Simacro frowned. Were they trying to get themselves destroyed? And then he understood. So did the Springhawk's weapons officer.
Captain, Cruiser 1 is moving to shield Cruiser 2,
F'Praia warned.
Recommend we move dorsal or ventral to compensate,
as Morty added from the helm.
Hold position, Thrawn said. I think Cruiser 1 is hoping to give Cruiser 2 a chance to escape.
He smiled grimly at Simacro.
We're going to let them.
No!
The word bounced screaming through Kilori's head, spinning fear and sheer disbelief like a giant spider's web through his mind.
No, not Thrawn. Not here. Not again.
The Kilgee lasers lanced out, burning at the Chiss warship with little or no effect. The Chiss remained silent, taking the fire without responding. The silent shout of denial continued its crazed path through Kilori's mind. Then, even as the Kilgee lasers continued to wash across the Springhawk's hull, the anvil shuddered as multiple objects slammed into its starboard side. And as Kilori stared in horror, the complete right-hand side of the weapons, sensors, and defenses displays went solid red.
Plasma spheres!
He gasped.
General, the Chiss have hit us with...
He broke off as he belatedly recognized the terrible truth. The Springhawk was right there, directly in front of them, but the plasmasphere attack had come at them from the side. That could only mean...
They're not alone! He shouted. General, they're not alone! There's another Chiss warship out there!
Where?
Crowfip demanded.
I see nothing!
Fool! Kilori spat. Of course you don't see anything! They've disabled all the sensors on that side! We have to get out of here!
He grabbed for his restraints, popped the catch.
Step out of that seat and die,
Crowfip said, his voice suddenly gone the temperature of liquid nitrogen.
The enlightened do not run. We stand, we fight, and we prevail.
Turning away from Kilori, he began jabbering away in the Kilji language.
So you think,
Kilori muttered, his winglets beating desperately against his cheeks. Thrawn in front of them, another Chiss warship to starboard. Whether the Kilji recognized it or not, they were all dead. Unless... He looked at the sensor display. If the Nikkar Dune had evaded the plasmasphere attack and was in position to help, they might still have a chance. Three ships against two.
Oh, but no.
Even as Kilori's searching eyes located the blockade cruiser, he saw a plasmasphere arrow across from the Springhawk to explode into a brief light show across the Nikkar Dune's bow. There would be no help coming from that quarter. The stars shifted as the anvil began to move. Kilori's winglets paused briefly in their rhythm to give a surprised twitch. Was the anvil turning away? Giving up its attack on the Springhawk? It was. More than that. Worse than that. It was turning its paralyzed starboard flank into the Chiss barrage. What in the depths was Crowfip doing? And then he understood. Crowfip was maneuvering the anvil to shield the hammer from the Springhawk's laser fire, giving the smaller picket cruiser time to recover from the plasmasphere attack, so that it could join in the battle? No, so that it could run. His winglet's twitch of surprise turned into a ripple of contempt. So much for stand, fight, and prevail. He could appreciate Crowfip's willingness to sacrifice himself and his ship to get word of the ambush back to Jixtus, but it was still a far cry from taking the Chiss head-on with the usual Kilji bluster and arrogance, even if there was no chance of success. And speaking of chances and success, furtively, Kilori looked around the bridge. Crowfip's vassals were working frantically at their boards, trying to bring plasma-frozen weapons back to life, even as the Chiss laser fire systematically blasted those same weapons into scrap. The general himself was having a loud and animated discussion with someone, probably the hammer's captain, and was paying little attention to anyone or anything else. If Kilori was going to make a run for it, this was his chance. Carefully, making sure to keep his movements small, he finished disentangling himself from his restraints. If Thrawn would be kind enough to accommodate him just this once... And there it was, exactly as he'd hoped. A sudden double jolt as a pair of breacher missiles slammed into the anvil's numbed side, the impact jerking everyone on the bridge against their restraints. Kilori was ready. He jumped from his seat, hit the deck running, and wove his way desperately between the control stations toward the orange-rimmed door of the portside escape pod. He was nearly there before Crowfip spotted him.
Pathfinder!
The Kilji bellowed.
Stop!
Kilori kept going, his back tensing in anticipation of the shot that was surely about to shatter his spine or blow out the center of his chest. But the shot didn't come. He reached the escape pod, one hand thrust out toward the wall to slow his momentum, the other reaching out to slap the hatch release. Both hands connected. and as the hatch rolled open, he tumbled inside the pod. He slapped the ceiling control as he fell past it, managing to turn halfway over for one final look over his shoulder as he slammed onto the deck. Crowfip was standing at a station, swinging up a large black weapon toward him. Too late! The hatch rolled shut, cutting off Kilori's view and Crowfip's last chance to punish his pathfinder for his cowardice. But just as the hatch closed, Kilori got a single glimpse of the starboard bridge wall exploding in a burst of fire and vaporized metal as the Chiss lasers punched through. An instant later, Kilori was thrown up and back against the hatch as the thrusters ignited, blasting the pod out of its tube. He bounced off the unyielding metal, then spun helplessly through the center of the pod as the anvil's artificial gravity vanished and was replaced by the free fall of deep space. Grabbing a handhold, he shoved himself into one of the seats and strapped in. Only then, with the stars and black of space filling the pod's small viewport and the mad desperation of his near death fading, did he have a chance to fully assess his situation. The anvil was destroyed. The hammer either was destroyed or had made its escape. And Kilori was arrowing through the void in a small metal cylinder, surrounded by enemies who would probably assume he was an escaped Kilji and react accordingly. There was only one chance. Thrawn was one of those enemies, and he seemed to enjoy gathering information. If he spotted the escape pod and thought it might contain someone or something useful, he might go to the effort of chasing it down and retrieving it intact, instead of offering it to his laser crews for target practice. Might. It was a small chance. Infinitesimally small, probably. But right now, it was all he had. Closing his eyes, feeling his winglets slow to a tired stop, he settled back to wait. With a violent, multiple blast that seemed to shiver from the breacher's impact point all the way aft to the stern, the larger of the two Kilji cruisers disintegrated. Simakro took a careful breath. It hadn't been easy, but it hadn't been nearly as hard as he'd expected it to be. That was good. Or else it was very, very suspicious.
Damage report, Thrawn called. Minor damage to Breacher 2, port ventral sensors, and barrier nodes 4 through 8, Brisch said from the comm station. Repairs underway.
Very good, Thrawn said. A question, Mid-Captain.
Sir?
Simakro asked, frowning.
You seem concerned, Thrawn said. Is it the unexpectedly quick victory, or the fact that we fired first?
Not so much the latter, sir, Simakro said, a small part of him noting how proficient he was becoming at rationalizing away the Council's standing non-aggression order.
We may technically have fired first, but they fired on us before our spheres hit them. I assume you somehow knew they wouldn't engage in a lengthy conversation.
I thought it likely, Thrawn said.
These Kilgis seem impatient, even short-tempered. I also note that their ships are designed around a first-strike strategy. Was it the quick victory, then?
Not the victory itself, Simakro said, but the fact that the commander gave up so easily on his attack. I realize his maneuvers were designed to allow the other cruiser to escape unscathed, or at least relatively so, but that behavior doesn't mesh with their vocal arrogance. I'd have thought sheer stubbornness would keep them fighting longer.
Agreed, Thrawn said. And when a person or species acts contrary to what seems to be their nature,
One must look to see if there's a higher factor or directive involved.
Senior Captain, the Aelos is hailing us, Brisch put in. Thrawn touched the comm key.
This is Senior Captain Thrawn, he called, switching back to T'Arja. My apologies for the attack, Wingali, for Ma'oksa. It appeared you were preparing to fire on the Kilgis, and I didn't want you revealing your true identity.
So I gathered,
Wingali said calmly.
My compliments on the quick and efficient way you delivered that message, given that any comm signal would have been intercepted by our common enemy. They are our common enemy, are they not?
They are certainly a common opponent, Thrawn said. Whether we and the Kilgis are truly enemies still remains to be seen. I trust your systems have recovered from our attack.
Wingali made an odd sound.
In fact, Senior Captain, they were never affected. You didn't see, and neither, I presume, did our enemies, that I had moved a shuttle into position just off my bow, where it was likely to escape notice. It was that shuttle that took the brunt of your plasma sphere.
Indeed, Thrawn said, and Simakro could hear both admiration and amusement in his voice.
Well done. You and your people continue to surprise and impress me.
We'll take that as a compliment,
Wingali said.
I presume you're here to return the mages and her companion to her people.
Just the mages, Thrawn said,
the amusement fading from his voice.
But we'll speak of that later. Before we continue inward, I'd like to take a few hours and collect some of the debris for analysis.
We shall leave you to that,
Wingali said.
In the meantime, would you like us to retrieve the escape pod?
Thrawn sat up straighter in his command chair.
I was unaware a pod had been jettisoned.
It was near the end of the battle,
Wingali said.
After the small ship escaped to hyperspace, just prior to the larger ship's destruction. From your position, it wouldn't have been visible.
You're tracking it?
Yes,
Wingali said.
Would you like its position and vector?
Yes, thank you,
Thrawn said.
With your permission, I'd like to take the Springhawk to retrieve it.
I have no objections,
Wingali said.
I presume you'll share its contents with the Bakosh.
Certainly, Thrawn said.
Asmodi? I have the pod's location, sir,
the pilot confirmed.
Take us to it, Thrawn said. Best possible speed.
Yes, sir.
We'll speak again soon, Wingali for Ma'oksa,
Thrawn said, and keyed off the comm.
You think the ship's commander might have been less willing to sacrifice himself than he was his ship and crew?
Simakro asked as the Springhawk leapt forward, driving through the debris cloud and toward the distant mark Asmodi had added to the tactical display.
Unlikely,
Thrawn said, an intense expression on his face.
I expect that aliens who call themselves enlightened will follow their leaders unquestioningly. But there was likely someone aboard who might have felt differently.
Simakro looked out the viewport with sudden understanding.
They had a navigator.
I would say almost certainly,
Thrawn said.
And whether General Crowfip released him or he made the decision to leave the ship himself, I think we'll find him in that port.
Symmachro smiled tightly.
And where you find a ship's navigator, you find where that ship has been.
And perhaps who that ship has been associating with,
Thrawn said.
Senior Commander F. Pryor, prepare a tractor beam.
He looked up at Symmachro.
And you, Mid-Captain Symmachro, please prepare a proper welcome for our guest.
Memories 5.
It was pure luck that the courier ship scheduled to return Thrast to Chela was delayed an hour. That was the only reason the ship was still rising through Naboar's atmosphere when the emergency message came through, ordering him to head immediately to the Stybla stronghold, a quarter of the planet away from his original meeting in the Expansionary Defense Fleet headquarters. The message carried no additional details, but the courier's pilot clearly knew what immediately meant, and he had Thrass on the landing area outside the Stybla mansion in record time. Senior aide Lapinsick was waiting inside the ornate outer doors.
Welcome, Aristokra Thrass, and thank you for coming, the other greeted him, his expression grim. The Patriarch will see you in his office.
Without waiting for a reply, he turned and strode off down the wide hallway.
I look forward to seeing him, Thrass said,
hurrying to catch up and wondering what was going on. There were no smiles or sly comments from Lapinsick this time, as there'd been when he invited himself to Thrass's bistro table a handful of years ago. There was no posturing either, nor had there been any of the reflexive tonal sparring that occurred whenever officials from one family met those from another. This was a man who was worried, desperately worried. Bypassing the larger doors, which Thrass knew from other stronghold mansions led to more formal audience and meeting chambers, Lapinsick led the way to a more unobtrusive door, plain wood, with no markings or decoration. He opened it, moving to the side and gesturing Thrass to enter. Thrass gave him a nod of thanks, then stepped into the room. There were two others already there, Thrass noted, as Lapinsick followed him in and closed the door behind them. In the center of the room, seated behind a carved desk, was Patriarch Lamiov, dressed in a formal dark green outer wrap robe with gold filigree on the collar and down both arms. He was old, his skin paled with age, his close-cut hair displaying a scattered star field of white, but his eyes were clear, and his face was sharp and intelligent. Standing at the front corner of the desk, half turned toward the door, was Thrawn.
Welcome, Syndic Thrass, Lamiov said, his voice grave. The Stybla are facing a potential disaster of the highest order, and Patriarch Thraki has graciously offered your assistance in resolving it.
We stand by our Patriarch in all things, your Venerante,
Thrass assured him, picking his words with practiced ease. There was no harm, after all, in reminding Lamiov that he and Thrawn were here at Thuraki's request, not his.
12 hours ago, a Stybla cargo ship left Chela, bound for Spossia and Naboar,
Lamiov said. If he'd noticed the subtle underscoring in Thrass's comment, he gave no indication.
7 hours later, it was on its approach to the Decim industrial field on Spossia, when it was attacked by a pirate ship, disguised as an Obic transport. Before anyone could intervene, the pirates overpowered the crew, took possession of the ship, and escaped into hyperspace.
Thrass felt his throat tighten. So that was why he and Thrawn were here. The Obic, the seventh ruling family, were recent and slightly wobbly allies of the Myth. If someone was hoping to use this incident to tarnish their name and standing, it would make sense for Lamiov to want one of their allies as part of the investigation.
"Do we know if any Opik were actually involved?" he asked.
"I hardly think an Opik pirate squad would use one of their own ships."
"Unless they assumed everyone would think that way," Thras pointed out.
"Are there recordings of the incident?"
Thrawn spoke up, pulling out his Questus.
"Yes, three of them,"
Lamiov said, picking up his own Questus and tapping to send across the data.
"I'm afraid none of them are very clear."
"Understandable," Thrawn said. "If no one was close enough to intervene, no one would be close enough to make good recordings either."
"Who's in charge of orbital security at Sposia?"
Thras asked, pulling out his Questus and keying for his own copy of the recordings.
"Excellent question,"
Lamiov said.
"Lapansik?"
"It's a combined force, including the elements of Kinkru, Obik, Klar, and Chap," Lapansik said. "All four families have strongholds here, which is why the security duties are shared."
Thras nodded, gazing at his Questus with a sinking heart as the hijacking unfolded. The pirate's plan was straightforward enough. Their Obik transport eased up toward the Stibla cargo ship, feigning maneuvering thruster problems, then suddenly slammed alongside and locked the two ships together. For 3.5 minutes, they remained that way, their mutual orbit continuing to sink them slowly toward the planet below, before the Stibla's drive suddenly came to full power and drove the still-linked ships toward deep space. 2 minutes after that, as the planet's patrol ship scrambled in a vain attempt to intervene, the hijackers and the hijacked vanished together into hyperspace. He went through the attack 3 times, once from each of the recording's viewpoints and angles. The multiple viewings didn't make the mess any easier to watch.
"These patrol ships are designed for 2 crew members, Thrawn said. "Yet I see only a single pilot listed on each."
"That's correct," Lapansik said. "They've ordered an upgrade to other ships, and System Patrol decided the most efficient course of action would be to pull half the pilots off active duty and begin their retraining."
"Which family arranges the patrol schedule?"
"Again, a joint command group, including each of the four families."
"We already looked at that, Mid-Commander,"
Lamiov added.
"We can find no evidence that the schedulers conspired to maneuver the security forces far enough away that they couldn't assist the cargo ship in time."
"I see," Thrawn said. "In that case, I believe the pirates were of the Klar."
Thras looked up at him in amazement.
"The Klar? Why would they want a Stibla cargo ship?"
"I didn't suggest it was an upper-level Klar operation," Thrawn said. "I merely suggested the pirates were from that family."
"Why do you think so?"
Lamiov asked. Thrawn gestured to his Questus.
"Look at the recordings again. The indicators are there."
"There's no time for a game of riddle me," Lapansik said, an edge of impatience in his voice. "Just tell us!"
Thras looked at Thrawn, and it seemed to him that a flicker of resignation crossed his face.
"There are 3 families represented in these recordings," he said.
He tapped the one made by the Klar pilot.
"But only this pilot is already recording before the attack begins."
Thras frowned at his Questus. Thrawn was right.
"Because she knew it was about to happen."
"Yes, I see,"
Lamiov commented, his voice cold.
"Sloppy."
"Pirates and hijackers are not known for their overall cleverness,"
Thras pointed out, sifting through the possibilities. Criminal gangs typically were organized within a single family, with very few of them crossing family lines. If a Klar pilot was in on it, as Thrawn had already deduced, presumably the rest of the hijackers were Klar as well. "You need to detain that pilot immediately, O Venerante," he said. "You should also contact someone on Rigar. Patriarch Klar Ibelexo needs to know what's happened."
"The pilot is already isolated in a debriefing room,"
Lapin Six said, working his questus.
"We'll make sure she doesn't leave."
He frowned thoughtfully.
"As to Patriarch Rivlex, he may already know.
We're getting reports that a number of high-level communications have come back and forth from his office in the 5 hours since this happened."
"He knows about the theft, and is trying to track down the hijackers,"
Lamiov said grimly.
"So he knows."
Thras shot a look at Thrawn, saw his same surprise reflected in the other's face. Had Lamiov just repeated himself?
"So it would seem, Your Venerante," Lapin Six said. "But Syndic Thras is correct. You need to discuss this matter with him at once."
"Agreed."
Lamiov looked at Thrawn and Thras.
"With your permission, I'd like to keep you here for the next short time. We may need more of your assistance to resolve this situation."
"As I said, we're here at the behest of our patriarch," Thras said. "Until he says otherwise, we're yours to command."
"Though,"
Thrawn shot a look at Thras,
"I'm scheduled to take up my new post aboard the Springhawk in 3 hours. I'm not certain how this delay would be perceived by my superiors."
Thras winced, and after the politics-edged debacle with the Leo Aoi and Garweans that Thrawn had just suffered through, he could imagine the Hierarchy Defense Council being eager to get him and his picket group out of the Ascendancy and off onto their distant pirate hunt.
"I'll speak with General Bakif,"
Lamiov said.
"There will be no adverse repercussions, I assure you."
"Then I also am at your service,"
Thrawn said.
"Thank you both,"
Lamiov said.
"If you follow..."